Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
To HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Stephanie Ince, who will be telling us a little bit about dystonia. Tell me a little bit about dystonia.
Sure. So dystonia is a neurological movement disorder. It's characterized by involuntary muscle contractions, which can force the body into abnormal and sometimes painful movements or positions.
So can you give me an overview of your organization's work in regards to it?
Sure. The Dystonia Medical Research Foundation is a charitable organization. It was set up by a couple whose child was diagnosed with dystonia back in 1976, so we've been around for over 40 years. The mission of the organization is threefold. We aim to raise funds to support and encourage research to better understand dystonia, because at this point, we really don't know all that much about it. In addition, we aim to support patients and their families, so we run about 35 different support groups across the country in Canada, and allow the opportunity for patients and their families to meet in communities all over the country. And then in addition, we offer support through our foundation. So individuals, particularly individuals who are newly diagnosed, will often have a lot of questions because, they won't necessarily have ever heard of dystonia. They won't be familiar with what it means for their life. So they can come to us and we're able to provide them with, you know, the information that they need. And then finally, our sort of third goal is to help to raise awareness of dystonia, not only to the general population, but also to healthcare practitioners, because in many cases it can take a patient years to get a proper diagnosis. So we really aim to help create awareness through our website, through social media, and whenever possible through things like this.
So when it comes to dystonia itself, do you know about how many people are impacted?
It's hard to say for sure. We have estimates that approximately 50,000 people in Canada have dystonia. It's the third most common movement disorder following essential tremor and Parkinson's disease. But it can be a bit confusing because there are a number of other conditions, such as Parkinson's, that may have dystonia as a symptom. So it is very hard to actually come up with a number, but to date, our best guess is 50,000 people in Canada.
So when you say it's related to other conditions or similar to them, rather, are there any myths or stereotypes out there concerning dystonia?
There are. There's in many cases, because people haven't heard of dystonia, when they see somebody who presents with dystonia, and dystonia can present in many different ways, but when they see somebody who presents with dystonia, often they will think that that person has, often people will think that it's cerebral palsy. Sometimes it looks like Parkinson's, because dystonia can have shaking-like moments. In addition, I mean, sometimes people will just think that somebody's, twisted oddly, and will sort of, wonder why. But it's very common for us to hear from patients that one of their greatest frustrations with the condition, in addition to how painful it is and the fact that there is no cure and the fact that it's taken them a long time to get a diagnosis, one of the biggest concerns and frustrations for patients is that nobody has heard of it. So for many patients, when they present symptoms, their networks, their communities, their families have never heard of the condition. And so a lot of the time people don't necessarily give it the same kind of credence as they would to other conditions. I had a patient who is, you know, has done volunteer work for one of our support groups, and she had to actually undergo cancer treatment. And she was saying that when she was, you know, telling everybody about the fact that she had cancer, everybody was saying, oh my goodness, that's so terrible, you know, poor you. And one of the things she said was that, you know, obviously you don't want to compare conditions because they're all terrible. But one of the things that she said was that, you know, for her dystonia symptoms were actually much worse and much more painful, but she didn't get the same kind of understanding from people because nobody knew what it was.
So in your awareness efforts and the work of the organization, is there any success story that you'd like to share?
I mean, I think every little bit counts. So because the community is so supportive of one another and so, you know, passionate and committed to doing everything that they can do to raise awareness for dystonia, we see, despite the fact that we are a small organization, you know, we have one full-time staff person and we are very much run by the volunteer organizations and the patients that sort of step forward. We see every time there's an opportunity for a media interview or an opportunity for a patient to share their story with the hope that it will lead to greater awareness, patients always rise up to do that. So, you know, obviously September is Dystonia Awareness Month, and what the DMRF Canada has done is we really try to create opportunities for the dystonia community to be ambassadors for themselves and to raise awareness within their own networks. So we recently, back in June, we shot a video that included six different dystonia patients, and our aim was really to help bring a face and a voice to the condition in all of its forms. And so we launched that video in early September, and the results have been incredible. We've seen, you know, the community really rise up and share that with their networks, in addition to any of the other activities that are involving communities across the country. It's very much a condition that the community owns, and they really are champions for themselves. And so it's wonderful to see how passionate, despite their challenges and despite the fact that, you know, many of them are living with pain and with uncertainty, but they continue to really fight together and support each other to try to bring awareness of this condition.
So if you could send any message to the community about this condition and the need for awareness, what would you say?
I mean, I think, first of all, read up about dystonia. You know, there are likely people in your networks and in your lives who are suffering from it. And you know, if you can educate yourself so that when they come to you, you actually know what this is, I think that would make their experience so much easier. And don't stare, and don't, you know, try to understand that everybody is coming from this life sort of with their own challenges and experiences. And, you know, there are many conditions that cause pain and suffering, and dystonia is just one of them. So certainly I think encouraging the larger community to have more understanding of this condition is, you know, our greatest priority. And obviously really supporting the patients themselves and allowing them the space to be who they are and accepting them for who they are.
So how can my audience go about finding more information about dystonia?
The best place to get information about dystonia and about the Dystonia Medical Research Foundation Canada is on our website, which is at www.dystoniacanada.org.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Cameron Penn, who'll be telling us a little bit about OI. So tell me a little bit about the OI Foundation.
The OI Foundation was started almost 50 years ago. In fact, we celebrate our 50th anniversary next year by a woman named Gemma Geisman. And what our mission is to not only assist in the research of OI and the disorder itself, but to help improve the quality of life for all the folks who are suffering from OI, as well as their family, and pass along the information that we have gleaned through our medical advisory board and our partners over the years, and basically do whatever we can to patients, family members, friends of those within the OI community.
So, for those who might not be as familiar with OI as a condition, can you tell me a little about it?
I guess the best way for folks, to put it in layman's terms, it is a brittle bone disorder. And when most folks hear about it, they think, oh, it's a calcium deficiency or something along those lines. And it's really not. It's actually a defect in the collagen. And it's a mutation. There are number of different types, but basically what it comes down to, it's either a lack of quality collagen within the bones, which is the binding agent. And obviously with collagen, it affects a lot of things. It affects everything from hearing to cardiopulmonary. Collagen is throughout the body. And what it essentially does is, and there are severe types. There are people who have OI that basically never reach 6 months old. There are others like myself who have a really mild condition. And by mild, that means a dozen or so fractures throughout your life. Some, you know, there are folks who have had hundreds. But it's so across the spectrum of severity. You can have somebody with a fairly normal stature who has a fairly minimal number of breaks, and I say that relative to someone who doesn't have it, to those folks who are type 2 or 3 that are more or the most severe that we know of at this point, that are confined to a wheelchair and can sneeze and fracture ribs. So in that sense, brittle bone disorder is the best way to put it for somebody who doesn't quite understand it, but there are so many layers to it and so many complications. But for those who are looking from the outside in, that's probably the best way to put it.
So do you know offhand about how many people are affected with this condition?
Right now we're looking around 50,000. There are the tough part with OI is, if you don't know you have it and you go to your physician or the emergency room because you fracture something, it's maybe a day in medical school. And it's not something, because it is technically a rare disease, it's not something that is discussed on a broad basis. And that's one of the things we're trying to do, is broaden the understanding and the treatment within the medical community. Because when I was born and the nurses were changing me, they fractured my arm trying to put a onesie or a t-shirt on. And I was very fortunate, my parents were very fortunate, in that they had a pediatrician in Southern California who had another patient with OI. He knew it right away. But there are so many patients right now that go to a care provider, a physician, a pediatrician, or the emergency room, and the medical providers there have never heard of it or know so little about it that a lot of times it's misdiagnosed. So as far as we know, and that's a sort of a roundabout way of saying it, but as far as we know, there are about 50,000 people in the U.S. That are affected by it. Worldwide, obviously, the numbers are much greater. But the funny thing is with our partnerships through a lot of the international OI organizations, we're still not quite sure exactly what numbers we're dealing with.
So in your time with the foundation, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
I think the biggest thing, and I've been with the board now since 2014, we have done we've linked clinical practices that Tracy Hart, who's our CEO and is fantastic, has been she's been with us now, I think about 11 years. So I've been with her a little less than half of her time. What our biggest success stories are is getting the word out and the outreach. There have been a number of types, and Brendan Lee, who is one of our chief medical researchers down at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, there are a number of types and a number of new information that has come out about what may be the root cause of it and different treatments. There have been a number of drugs that have come out that have sort of not necessarily eased the condition of OI, but helped strengthen the bone. So it's lessened the fracture rates. There are a number of things that have happened in that sense, a number of things that are still out there that are being worked on as we speak. We're doing a long-term study with adults and children at this point. But I think the biggest thing is the connections that we've made link clinical research across the country, as well as what we've been able to do with some of our international partners, mainly to expand the reach of the OI Foundation and inform the medical community, the OI community at large, as well as folks who may not know anything about OI itself. So along those lines, and not only that, I have to give credit to our past president, Ken Gudeck, and Mark Birdwhistle before him, what they've done for fundraising. And that's just bringing money in to fund research, because the research is the core, it's the backbone of this. And until we know more exactly about what we're dealing with, we know a lot about it, but there's so much we don't know. And until we sort of get a better grip on that, I don't think, everybody says, well, we want to find a cure. And we know, I think, realistically, that's a long way off, but we're getting closer and closer every day. And it's so encouraging.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
This is Joe and Cam, your favorite two male nursing students at the University of Windsor, hosting No Scrubs on CJAM FM 99.1.
Join me and Joe every Tuesday at 12 and Wednesday at 4:30, where we discuss today's hottest health topics related to student life. We do the research, so you don't have to.
Remember, you can listen live or online at www.cjam.ca. And while you're at it, feel free to give us a follow at CJAM No Scrubs on Facebook.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Stephanie Inns about dystonia and from Cameron Penn about OI. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Jill Sando. She'll be telling us a little bit about how exercise and fitness programs can reduce disability and health risks. So tell me a little bit about some of the health risks you can reduce with regular exercise and being active.
Anything, like, there's a lot of heart-related things that can be reduced. The risk of diabetes, of course, through exercise. Yeah, like, I know a lot of it is, like, heart-related, especially when you're doing cardio. And some health things, if this counts, definitely is, like, any mobility issues, like knee pains, things like that. We know a lot of people have gotten, like, that has been relieved through exercise, of course. Yeah.
So, do you think that the stress reduction offered by some exercise programs might be a benefit?
Yeah, that's one thing that I was thinking about actually this morning, is that, like, everybody knows when you go to the gym, there's obviously a lot of, like, physical benefits too, but I feel like the mental and stress relief benefits aren't talked about as much, and that's definitely, like, a huge part of it too. which can be very underrated.
So, are there any challenges for someone getting started to get active in order to stay in, at their best?
I think maybe at first there could be a few, maybe just like getting out of your head a bit. Like, I know when I first started, like, it was a little nervous because it's a new thing, right? So getting started can be a little nerve-wracking, but I think once you make it a habit, that kind of feeling starts to go away, and then it increases your confidence through time. But it can definitely take some time to get into the habit of it, but the benefits of once you make it a habit are what makes it worth it, for sure.
So, are there any exercises or fitness opportunities you're aware of that can be engaged in by someone who might not have as much mobility to start off with?
Yeah, a lot of like our trainers are experienced in having some solutions for people who are not as mobile as others might be. Like there's a lot of variations you can do with like squats, lunges, things like that, that they're aware of that will definitely help no matter what kind of like issue or what like kind of thing you need to have like altered for yourself. There's a lot of things that like especially our trainers know, like they have a lot of clients which have unique things that need to be worked around, knee problems, anything like that. They always find ways to work around those things, so they're still getting the full benefit of like being active while not causing any harm.
So you mentioned that a lot of people come in with issues of pain and lack of flexibility.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing over time that would be reduced as a person gets more and more into routine.
Yep.
So if you could send any message to the community about why it is anyone, regardless of ability, should keep active and reduce the risks of heart conditions and stress, what would you say?
100%, I would say that I understand that it can be something that's stressful to get started in, and it can be hard to get into the proper mindset to really get into the habit. But once you kind of push yourself to get through those initial like steps, it like the benefits like are make it 100% worth it. Like I mentioned, like the mental health benefits are not talked about as much, but that's huge. I've talked to some members who talk about how they just get more confident through everything else that they do. It's basically a change that not only benefits like how you feel physically, it will benefit how you feel like all around, basically, like happier, more confident, like better mental health, more, you know. So yeah, that's definitely what I would say, is that the benefits of it are not just physical. It's basically like for no matter what you're doing in life, it makes you feel better all around, all day, instead of just when you're in the gym.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. My friends, I find it important periodically to mention there are health benefits and stress-reducing benefits of exercise, eating right, proper sleep, and all that. Fact is, the body is made to be cared for. It's not a matter of pushing yourself as hard as you can and seeing if you're still alive at the end. That's the great pitfall for too many people with disabilities. I mean, when you acquire one, sometimes you expect that you're automatically going to go back to the life you once had. It's not always working that way. In a lot of cases, it's about seeing things from a new standpoint, offering a new perspective, saying, I can't do it this way, but maybe I can do it that way. And maybe I can do things just a little bit better than I had before. That's what disability life is, my friends. It's not a limitation. It's just a new way of thinking. And honestly, when it comes to things like exercise, proper diet, things of that nature, can't be underestimated. Reducing stress alone can take the sting out of almost any condition. Fact is, if you're being dominated by what you're feeling, if it's ruling over you with pain or just thoughts of what might be, odds are you're not going to be at your best. You're not going to give the public that insight, that interaction that so many of us thrive on. But if
you take the time, take proper care, you can, in fact, live at your best. The less stress you have in your life, the better your chances. And through some forms of exercise, you might even find your immune system a little stronger, a little better prepared to deal with the problems that may come up. I mean, it's not rocket science here, folks. It's just a matter of recognizing that the body needs to be strengthened, cared for, and it has to be consistent. Things of this nature can't be a one-time, one-size-fits-all. What works for you might not work for the next person, but you can always learn from it. You can share insights. You can talk about, oh, with my mobility range, I might not be able to do it this way, but how do you suggest I adapt it? It's all mind over matter, my friends. It's all about thinking to yourself, is there a way I can do this? Simple truth is, we can all look at our current physical status and say, even our mental status, if you think about it, you can look at it and say, this is bigger than I am. It's an all-defining limitation. You can do that, certainly. But if you do, do you ever make progress? Does the world advance by people willing to settle for what is good versus what could be extraordinary? And people with disabilities exercise all the time. There are disability sports leagues, the ICHA included, out there playing every night. Not just providing strengthening, not just putting on a great show for the spectators, but really freeing the minds of those athletes. Because when you're out there doing what you love to do, you're not thinking about what could be holding you back. You're thinking about your next play. You're thinking about how to score the next point or to make the next increase in your strengthening. You're just doing what you love to do and what comes naturally to you. And for a person with a disability, particularly an acquired one, regular exercise can actually serve as a form of rehab. Yeah, you're doing it, you're making strength gains, you're looking a lot better, you're feeling a lot better. You might not even realize it, but you might actually be improving things for yourself. Just a natural byproduct. The truth of the matter is, yeah, there are times you're going to experience pain, you're going to experience setbacks. That's everything in life. However, the key is to recognize that a moment's setback is not a lifetime chain designed to keep you stuck in one place. Too many of us get lost in that, whether we have a disability or not. We allow ourselves to see the things we can't do rather than accepting the fact that there are things we can. Too many times do I see wasted potential. Do I see those lives who are afraid to take a chance, even though if they took that slightest inch forward, they could change their whole lives, and maybe the lives of a lot of people around them. It's just a matter of having faith in yourself, in the potential that all life has to create and to grow and to live at its best. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.